Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
What are Darwin's failed predictions? I'm Casey Luskin here on the ID the Future podcast, broadcasting from Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. Today we have on the show with us once again Dr. Cornelius Hunter, author of Darwin's God, Evolution and the Problem of Evil, as well as creator of the recently new blog, darwins-god.blogspot.com, and his new website, darwinspredictions.com, his being that of Dr. Cornelius Hunter, not Darwin himself. Dr. Hunter, as we talked about last time, has a very impressive resume. He's a graduate of the University of Illinois, where he earned a PhD in biophysics and computational biology. He's also adjunct professor at Biola University, and his book, Darwin's God, Evolution, the Problem of Evil, is an award-winning book. His other books include Darwin's Proof and Science's Blind Spot, and I would also add that he's a fellow of the Discovery Institute. Dr. Hunter, thank you again for coming on the show with us today to talk about your website, darwinspredictions.com.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
On the last podcast, we talked about sort of the introductory section to your website, going through some of the evolutionist objections that they will make when confronted with the many failed predictions of Darwinian evolution. On this podcast, I'd like to talk about those actual failed predictions of Darwinian evolution and some of the problems that evolution has faced over the decades and the centuries even in explaining the data. So let's maybe start off with a general question about your website. What is your favorite of the failed predictions of Darwinian evolution?
Boy, it's like picking out your favorite painting, and there's so many more to go on this website. I could put on dozens more. I think one of the most interesting ones on there is the prediction that biological change that we observe should be independent of need. So the whole idea behind evolution is you've got this biological variation occurring, and then the variation that happens to work, those magical marvels that somehow popped out of biology that work are the ones that are going to persist, and natural selection will kill off the ones that aren't working. But the designs themselves know nothing of the need. They don't know that there was an earthquake that changed the climate of the local region, or that there's a new predator species in the area that needs to be dealt with, or et cetera, et cetera. There you just have this blind, ongoing biological variation that has no intelligence. Well, it turns out when we look under the hood of biology and actually examine what is happening with biological variation, both at the molecular level and just at what we can observe in the field, biological variation is a fascinating topic that includes all kinds of intelligent changes that are going on in response to the environmental needs, to the needs of the species. It's a fascinating field, and as you might expect, some evolutionists, many evolutionists, are really giving some pushback, some serious pushback to what is frankly just too obvious to deny at this point. It's another example of how the theory of evolution has been holding back science and limiting science, but it's becoming too obvious now. And so what evolutionists are having to do is do some real intellectual gymnastics and headstands to try and explain how this possibly could have come about. They actually have to say that evolution created the mechanisms, the fantastically complicated mechanisms, to create the variation that then can be the fuel of evolution. So evolution creates the basis for evolution. It's really quite silly.
You're almost saying that they have evolved through undirected evolution, the ability to have directed evolution. Is that basically what you're getting at?
Right. Very good summary.
And of course, undirected evolution is certainly a very central tenet of Darwinism. And if you wouldn't mind waxing eloquent on that for a moment, I know that the idea that evolution is undirected is not just a scientific one, it's one that has very deep roots. Would you mind telling us why is it so important for evolutionists that evolution be undirected, even if that's not explaining the data very well?
Right. Why do we have to be undirected in the first place? Yeah, and that gets back to the religious foundation of evolution that drives everything that we're talking about here. Evolution is founded upon some deep theological principles that require that God get out of the picture. And the real easy one that we've talked about and I've written about is the problem of evil. God would not create evil. We've got this nasty, gritty world with everything from parasites to predators, and God wouldn't do these things. It wouldn't create these designs. And so we need to have natural processes create this, natural law rather than a divine finger creating the world. And so biological change needs to be blind, needs to have no intelligence in it, no divine or teleological indicators. So it's got to be something that just is a consequence of natural law. And natural law knows nothing of what's around it. Gravity acts because gravity acts. The rain falls because the rain falls. The wind blows. It doesn't know there's a purpose. It just happens. And that's what it's critical. It's a crucial component of evolution. They really can't get around that. They can't just say, well, gee, let's change our theory to include teleology. There actually is some intelligence built into biology. They can't do that. It's got to be blind and unintelligent. That's the metaphysics that's built into evolution.
Well, another failed prediction was the supposed unity of the basic cellular machinery. Why is this an important prediction, and why did it fail?
About 50 years ago, biologists started to piece together the cell and how the cell works, and the DNA code was discovered. The machinery around the DNA code was discovered, the DNA structure, proteins, RNA, and so forth. And it was found that there was a great similarity amongst the different species. And this was, of course, hailed as a great success for evolution. The DNA code was the same across the different species. The DNA structure was the same across the species. The way that proteins are constructed is the same across the different species. Well, if they all descended from a common ancestor, then, of course, you would expect to have those sorts of similarities. So, aha, here we have a great confirmation for evolution. And this was touted very strongly in the literature. Evolutionists claimed this was a real test, that evolution had passed with flying colors. Yet another example of the truth and proof of evolution. Well, you know, once we looked under the hood and really got into the details, we found out, well, this isn't quite so true. Actually, these proteins and the machinery that enact the DNA code and act on DNA and replicate the DNA molecule, there's actually some profound differences between different species. They're subtle. They don't jump out at you. We didn't discover these right off the bat. So just when evolutionists finished up claiming this great confirmation and this great successful prediction, lo and behold, biology kind of left evolution in the dust and showed, no, actually, this isn't the case. That prediction is actually false, not true.
What about the failures regarding the alleged evolution of eukaryotes from prokaryotes?
The prokaryotes are the simple bacteria, the simple cells that don't have a nucleus and other complicated structures. Eukaryotes are the more complicated cells in yeast and multicellular species on up to humans. Naturally, evolutionists thought that eukaryotes evolved from prokaryotes. That was the natural assumption. Now, looking under the hood, looking at the details, it doesn't appear so simple. In fact, evolutionists have hypothesized, probably half a dozen or more different scenarios of, you know, this evolved from that. Maybe there was an ancestor that came before the eukaryotes and prokaryotes. We have no evidence of this ancestor, but it somehow gave rise to them. Maybe the prokaryotes came from the eukaryotes. Maybe it was the other way around. Maybe this, maybe that. So the bottom line is evolution doesn't jump out at you from the evidence. Common descent does not jump out at you. In fact, there are substantial problems with the idea that these things are related via common descent. So evolutionists have had to come up with very complicated explanations.
What about Darwin's failed prediction about the evolution of the eye? We see this very simple story in textbooks all the time. Would you say that, you know, this is a legitimate prediction that Darwinism has made, or is this a successful prediction of evolution?
Well, again, this is another example of complicated explanations having to arise. Now, we look at biology, and there's several different types of eyes that we find in biology. What's interesting is when we look at the underlying biochemistry under vision, it's tremendously complicated. It's so complicated that your jaw just drops. It's really a marvel. Now, that's true when we look at the sophisticated, say, mammalian eye. Now, when we look at something simpler, for example, the third eye is an eye that is not used for actual putting together a scene. It doesn't recognize a scene like we do. A third eye simply recognizes darkness and light, so it tells animals when sunrise and sunset comes and things like that. The third eye, when we look at the details of it, it also has this tremendously complicated biochemistry. In fact, it's even more complicated. So we do not see kind of a increasing level of sophistication. Rather, we find early complexity, and we find that throughout biology, even in the vision.
Okay, well, let's get into a fun one here. Life is a hodgepodge. We hear this all the time from evolutionists. They tell us that evolution is clumsy, life is full of mistakes, evolutionary leftovers that all show sort of the clunky, clumsy evolutionary mechanism that Darwin proposed. Does the data really support this view of biology?
Right. I mean, no, it does not. And that's, again, over and over again, evolutionists are predicting simplicity and non-function, and everything is just a kludge. And you'd think they would learn. Over and over, we find this deep, deep complexity. You know, evolutionists talk about deep time. I think we need to talk about deep complexity. It really is profound. And on my website, in this prediction, I give an extended quote from Bruce Alberts, who an evolutionist who was president of the National Academy of Sciences. And let me give a little bit of this quote here. "We have always underestimated cells. Undoubtedly, we still do today, but at least we are no longer as naive as we were when I was a graduate student in the 1960s. And he goes on to say how what a simple view of cells that they had. A cell was a kind of a bag of chemicals with randomly diffusing molecules interacting when and where they could. It's just such a naive view nowadays, looking back on that. It's just astonishing that we could have thought that, and how a cheetah or a redwood tree could do the functions that it does with such a simplistic model of the cell. It's just incredible that evolutionists would even seriously entertain such a thought, but that's where evolution took them.
Well, we could spend the whole day talking about these, Dr. Hunter. Evolution produces selfish behavior, except for when it produces altruism. This is a very interesting behavior and failed prediction that you get into. How does this represent a failed prediction of evolution?
Right. Well, the failure with altruism is pretty simple. Altruism, of course, is the observation that people are nice to each other. People do good things sometimes. Animals do good things. Animals sacrifice for other animals sometimes. Altruism is a fact in biology, and it doesn't square with evolution. Evolution says that survival of the fittest, and you're not going to do something that's going to hurt yourself. Darwin had a couple of real nice quotes to that, which I gave in the website. So the falsification is pretty straightforward. We see altruism. It really doesn't make sense under evolution. What's interesting, and what I spend a lot of time describing, is the reaction that evolutionists have to the prediction that altruism should not be prevalent in biology. They really have had to remake evolution, and ever since the early 1960s, there's been kind of a third version of evolution has emerged, the new evolution, and people really aren't familiar with this. Within the halls of evolution, they've really undergone a remake, which is really becoming ludicrous. It is so non-scientific to read through what they're saying now, but this is what they have to do to accommodate and explain the altruism that we see. And it really gets into issues of behavior and ethics, and becoming pretty important and pretty interesting to see the influence that it's having. So we see this religious theory is coming around and now having influence on ethics. It's really something I'd like people to read, so I gave a fairly lengthy description of it in the website. It's important, and it really shows the problems with evolution that we have today. And that one of the themes of the website is the falsifications of these predictions are just the first step. What that takes you to is a more complicated version of the theory. See, any theory can always accommodate the evidence. You just make it more complicated. And that's what happened with geocentrism. It became fairly complicated to explain the eclipses and the movements of the celestial bodies. So the evolution now is becoming incredibly complex. Nothing at all what Darwin envisioned. It's a real Rube Goldberg machine in action now, and that's a sign that you're going down the wrong path in science, where your theory has just been patched and patched and patched, and it's really a very complicated theories.
I mean, haven't you heard, Dr. Hunter, that kin selection or reciprocation can explain the evolution of altruism? I mean, or are these just examples of how the theory becomes more and more complex to the point where it really can explain any behavior? Anything that exists must be adaptive. We can come up with some natural selection story for how it arose, some little just-so account. And so the theory really can explain anything, and therefore you're left with the question, what does it explain?
I mean, anything is the key word there, Casey. It really gets humorous. I mean, we're talking about every single human behavior you can imagine. You know, jealousy and retribution, guilt, love, hate, social tendencies and habits, friendship, empathy, gratitude, trustworthiness, and incredibly nuanced behaviors, such as a well-to-do family favors the daughters, whereas a less well-to-do family favors the sons, or maybe it's backwards, I don't remember, but all kinds of very subtle behaviors I didn't even know existed, evolutionists are explaining with very circuitous explanations of how natural kin selection, as you say, would come up with that. It's really rather silly.
Well, finally, I want to look at the assumption of naturalism and the critique that you make. We're told that naturalism leads to testable hypotheses, but in the ultimate analysis, is that really true? One of the statements that you write on the website darwinspredictions.com is, quote, "The irony here is that evolutionists make naturalism unscientific according to their own criterion of testability. This is because naturalistic explanations are the only explanations that are allowed. They therefore cannot be tested because they are true by definition. The only testing that can be done is between different sub-hypotheses of naturalism. Gradualism can be compared with punctuated equilibrium. Drift can be compared with selection, and so forth. But naturalism has been defined as the only scientific option available." Any comments on your statement here?
Well, sure, and just to clarify this for the listeners, trying to make this simple, evolutionists say that their theory is testable and their theory is falsifiable, whereas nothing else is. We really have to have evolution because only that scientific, only that can be tested and falsified and so forth. Well, it really can't be falsified. First of all, that becomes obvious just from looking at the website and looking at the evolution literature. It has endured tremendous falsifications and scientific problems, and it just becomes more complicated. And it really is not testable either, because naturalism, they have now defined the scientific method as requiring naturalistic explanations. You have to have rigid, strictly 100% naturalistic explanations in science. Well, they then cannot be tested. That's not a testable assumption. That's a going-in assumption. So only the different sub-hypotheses within naturalism can be compared. But what if naturalism is not always true? What if love, consciousness, complexity, all the things we observe in biology or in the world, maybe there's something out there that didn't arise from muddy water and the natural forces that bring you the wind and the rain. Maybe there's something out there that's more than just the product of naturalistic processes. Well, that could never be discovered. That could never be explained by evolution. So that's an impossibility under evolution. So we really can't test evolution. They've rendered their science non-testable. So it's really hypocritical for evolutionists to use this testability criteria against any competition.
Well, Dr. Hunter, thank you very much for coming on the show with us today. Your website is darwinspredictions.com. I highly recommend it to anyone, whether you're a student, a teacher, or just somebody who's interested in the issue, as a great place to learn about evolution and some of the evidence that challenges it, and really the history of evolutionary biology, and where it has failed and where it has been successful, and sort of how the theory itself has evolved over time. So thank you so much for sharing with us your insight today and talking about your website.
Casey, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, again, Dr. Hunter's blog is darwins-god.blogspot.com, and his website is darwinspredictions.com. I'm Casey Luskin with the ID of the Future podcast. Be sure to check out these websites and learn a lot about this debate over evolution. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.